meditation. Narad Muni said a student should practice complete controlling his senses. He should be submissive and should have an attitude of firm friendship for the spiritual master. With a great vow, the brahmachari should live at the Gurukul only for the benefit of the guru. So there's no purport, there's a few texts to read, so I'll just read them. At both junction of day and night, namely in the early morning and in the evening, he should be carefully absorbed in thoughts of the spiritual master, fire, the sun god, and Lord Vishnu. And by chanting the Gayatri Mantra, he should worship them. Being called by the spiritual master, the student should study the Vedic mantras regularly, every day, before beginning his studies and at the end of his studies. The disciple should respectfully offer obeisances unto the spiritual master. Carrying pure kusha grass in his hand, the brahmachari should dress regularly with a belt of straw and with deerskin garments. He should wear matted hair, carrying a rod and water pot, and be decorated with a sacred thread, as recommended in the Shastras. The brahmachari should go out morning and evening to collect alms, and should offer all that he collects to the spiritual master. He should eat only if ordered to take food by the spiritual master. Otherwise, if the spiritual master does not give his order, he may sometimes have to fast. A brahmachari should be quite well behaved and gentle and should not eat or collect more than necessary. He must always be active and expert, fully believing in the instructions of the spiritual master and the Shastras. Fully controlling his senses, he should associate only as much as necessary with women or those controlled by women. Purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki. A brahmachari should be very careful not to mix with women or with men addicted to women. Although he does go out to beg alms, it is necessary to talk with women and with men very much attached to women. This association should be very short, and he should talk with them only about begging alms and not more. The brahmachari should be very careful in associating with men who are attached to women. Magyana. So, heavy verses. Because you're all sitting here as brahmacharis, so I can really... Srila Prabhupada here, not Srila Prabhupada himself alone, but the Shastras are stating the principle of brahmachari. So this verse, this chapter, is a perfect society of the four spiritual classes. So the first thing it deals with here is brahmachari, as brahmachari is the first division of civilized life. So here, in the first verse, a student should practice complete controlling his senses. Danta, continuously practicing controlling his senses. So this is the first principle of brahmachari. We see with the pastime of Prahlad Maharaj and Hiranyakashipu that Prahlad Maharaj was explaining to his father fearlessly that you control the whole universe just by raising your eyebrow. The demigods run in fear. But you can never be happy, because even though you control the whole universe and all the demigods, you can't control your own senses. So immediately he chastised him. So for Hiranyakashipu, he got the mercy from his son. My son was 5, and he just let him have it straight. So this controlling of the senses is the most important aspect. Devamrita Maharaj, the last few days, has explained very nicely. Whatever material advancement they make, then whatever they do, they're always actually doomed to failure, because the one thing they can't do is control their senses. So, looking at that in another way, if we can learn ourselves to control our senses, then no matter what situation we are in life, whether we're multi-billionaires, whether we're financial consultants, or whether we're whatever we do with our lives, then if we can control our senses, then that quality, that principle, if we attain that, we can use it for our entire lives in any situation. So this is the Vedic training for brahmacharis and also for grihasthas, vanaprasthas, sannyas, but is to learn to control our senses so that we can take that with us. The person who has not controlled his senses, no matter what he applies himself to, he can never be happy. This is Veda as well, this is knowledge. So when the materialist hears these, they can also understand that any business person, I deal a lot with business people, so any business person, they see them, the workers, they see them drive in 11 o'clock in the morning in their Rolls Royce or their Bentley Coupe. Has anyone seen the new Bentley Coupe? That's very nice. I saw one in there actually the other day. Anyway, they have their big fast cars, they drive in. And the workers are a little bit, you know, disturbed. And he comes here 11 o'clock, he leaves at 2, and that's all he does. But what they don't see is that he's generally, unless they're born into wealth, generally they've spent 15, 20 years of austerity, of controlling their senses, of giving up lower things for the higher principle of making money, which isn't the highest principle, of course, as you all know. So they engage in austerity in order to attain a result. So this principle of austerity and controlling the senses is there both in spiritual life and in material life. So as Srila Prabhupada explained personally to the Beatles when he was speaking to them, I listened to that lecture a few times. So he made the point, even to be musicians, you have to practice. You have to engage in austerity, you have to control the senses. So this principle is there for all of us, whatever we are, situation in life, whether we're guests coming to the temple, whether we're brahmacharis, whether we're living inside, outside, whatever situation in life we are, then this controlling of the senses is one of the main principles that if we can attain, then this will lead to actual progress. The whole material world is looking to make progress. India is now on a march to make progress, to catch up with the rest of the world, and of course to overtake the rest of the world in a material advancement. But real advancement is actually advancement in quality as an individual. The world is made up of individuals. If the individuals get better, the world will get better. If the individuals become more degraded, as they are, then the world will become more degraded. It doesn't matter how much money you throw at a project. It doesn't matter how much social development you try to input. Unless the people, unless we as individuals improve, and we can improve the world, and the people in the world improve, then there'll be no improvement. So this controlling of the senses is very important. And then the next words were guru hitam, which means only for the benefit of guru, and not for one's personal benefit. So this is something we can analyze in our own lives. How much are we performing activities for ourselves, for our pratistha, for our fame, for our recognition, for just our personal benefit? How much are we performing activities for that end, or how much are we actually performing activities wholly and solely, purely, 100%, without any other motive to please the mission of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Krishna, Srila Prabhupada, and your own Guru Maharaj? How much are we engaged at every moment, every second, in that mission, in that principle? And then we can judge for ourselves, how much actually am I dedicated to this mission of Lord Chaitanya? How much is it that and nothing else? So this is a very good barometer for our own spiritual lives. We can see, we may be in an institution, we may be in an ashram, we may have this head, that head, this situation, we may have this locker. I see you all have lockers. You may have this locker, and you may prefer the bigger locker. They're all the same size, aren't they, the lockers? So you, whatever situation, if you're meditating on how what I can gain, whether it's a bigger locker or maybe in the senior brahmachari room or a senior brahmachari shower. Do you have senior brahmachari showers? No? You're more equal here than most places. So whatever it is, even if it's a slight motive, then we know immediately I've deviated from, why am I thinking about myself? You know, I have to eat. I have to remain healthy. I have to maintain the body, but above and beyond that, everything can be for Krishna. All my money, all my intelligence, if we have any, if all our material resources, just given to Krishna. Everything can be given to Krishna. So this pure devotional service, this, as Prabhupada said, I think Brahmananda told a very nice story, you probably know it, about where the word unalloyed comes from. Does anyone know? You know, anyway, I'll tell the story. If there's only one person, I'll tell the story. It's a nice story. So Brahmananda was in the temple somewhere, I don't know whether 22nd Avenue or somewhere, it's in the early days. So Hamsadutta He'd just bought a van, and Prabhupada was very pleased he bought this van. So then, of course, I've ruined the story now because I've told the punchline, but anyway. So one day Prabhupada said, I want to go and ride in that van, that new van. So then they got in the van. They didn't have any chairs, so they had to put a chair in for Prabhupada, and Prabhupada sat in the chair. And Prabhupada directed left here, right here, left here. And no devotee knew where they were going. But Prabhupada seemed to know exactly where he was going. So eventually they got to the pier, they got to the water in this pier. So then Prabhupada said, yes, I spent some time here. And then he got his cane, and like a teacher on a chalkboard, he pointed to this huge sign, and it said, unalloyed metals. So Prabhupada saw that, and he used that word, unalloyed. Kevala Anandakanda. Kevala means only? Yeah. Sorry, my Sanskrit's not so good. In Bengali? Or Sanskrit? Sanskrit? Same. So only. The point is, pure devotional service has to be without motive, without any alloyment, unalloyed. So if we can engage in pure devotional service with our mentality that we just do everything to please Guru and Gauranga and Krishna, then immediately our hearts become cleansed and we feel enlivened. Just like for myself coming here, seeing all the devotees who are attempting to engage in pure devotional service, the whole atmosphere is to charge. And then you become enlivened. So this is actually the medicine for the conditioned soul. And if we have this medicine, it's like if someone came up with a cure for instance, AIDS, or cholera, or typhoid, or any disease, and they kept it to themselves. That person, if he was discovered maybe 20 years later that he had the cure for AIDS, and he discovered that, and the public discovered that he had it, and he kept it to himself, what would happen to that person? He would be considered the most, not deviant, that's a new word, isn't it? Not a demon, but deviant. He'd be considered to be the worst deviant, the most selfish, stupid person on the planet. He had the cure for AIDS. He let millions and millions and millions and millions of people die just because he didn't share that medicine. So we have the medicine for material life, for complete annihilation of material life. And we're not willing to share it with... What type of creepiness are we? I remember when I first came to the movement, I joined in London, and I was walking down the street. I just became convinced about Krishna consciousness, and I thought, oh no, I'm going to have to share this. I have a duty now. I have a mission. I have a responsibility to share this Krishna consciousness with other people. And I realized I was walking down Oxford Street. One or two of you know Oxford Street, and I got hit up by one Mataji. Probably no one knows, they're called Guna Tirtha, one lady who joined, she's still a devotee in London, and she told me to give a donation for some project. I can't repeat what she said because I don't think it was particularly true. But anyway, so I gave her some money, and she told me that she was a devotee. And I said I was just going to the temple. She didn't believe me, actually. She just thought I was saying it. So at that point I realized I had a responsibility to deliver and to share this solution to material life. So the onus is really on us to give. And this is one of the first things that struck me about Krishna consciousness, was I saw the video with Srila Prabhupada, and he was giving a lecture to a huge crowd of people in America after Rath Yatra, just a talk. So, of course, all you are familiar with Krishna consciousness. So, he gave, and you've seen the video many times, but it was the one thing that really convinced me, because I thought, swamis, gurus, they're all here to take your money, they give you a mantra, and then in 6 months, you're supposed to become God, and they're living, Bhagwan Rajneesh was, had all his Rolls Royces, and the Beatles, and everything. So I had this real conviction that these swamis were coming to take, to take money or to take prestige, to get followers. So then I heard Prabhupada deliver this speech, and he said, he was in America, he said, all you girls and boys, you take to this Krishna consciousness. Everyone follows America. Everyone is building skyscrapers. Everyone's building flyovers. Oh, there's a flyover being built just at Radhakund now, on the road to Radhakund, just outside Vrindavan. So they're all following these American. So if you girls and boys, he said, take to this, Krishna consciousness, the whole world will follow. And then he leaned into the microphone and he said, and everything will become Vaikuntha. And it was like a tear in his eye. So at that point I realized, well, you know, Prabhupada came to give. He didn't come to take. So the onus is on us to actually give this Krishna consciousness to the world. Here in Chaupati you have a little epicenter of volcanic activity, spiritual energy. So, and it's exploding in different places. Other devotees, they preach in other parts of the world. So this is our duty. And I think most preachers here, most devotees, they do some preaching. And even cleaning the floor is preaching. So we feel part of the preaching mission. That when at the end of the day, we feel satisfied. We might feel tired, might have a headache, we might feel sick. But we feel very satisfied in heart. Because we're preaching, because we're giving. Sharing, actually. Preaching doesn't mean to shove down someone's throat. Preaching actually means to share. And we see an example of Srila Prabhupada, especially with the early disciples, how much he had a loving sentiment and a sharing mood. So here, Shastra, Surida, firm friendship for the spiritual master. So this is the mood. So what happens? We go out and preach, what do we become? Does anyone know? Any suggestions? When we go out and preach, what do we become? Yeah, we become blissful, that's true. Well, we should become blissful. But also, one other thing, we become gurus. We go out and preach. We may be a new bhakta, but if the new bhakta knows something about Krishna and tells them, please chant Krishna's name, then you become guru. So what is the mood of a preacher? We become firm friends of the people we're preaching to. And when people feel that friendship, then immediately, there's an expression in English, it's not what you know, it's not how much you know, it's how much you care. And when people know that you care, then that's a very important part of firm friendship. So we try and develop our relationship with our guru as a firm friend, and we try and become a firm friend of other people. Anyway, I'm preaching to the converted here. You're the example of counseling programs, etc. But this is Shastra. So this first principle of controlling the senses and trying to benefit the guru and not benefit ourselves are main principles. So I'll just move on. I didn't mean to speak that long on that. So the student should study every day, pay his obeisances before and after studying. And everyone should wear a straw belt. I don't see any straw belts here. But of course the principle of that is to live very simply. And a deerskin garment. He should always be active and expert. So, I noticed in the brahmachari quarters at around 7th, no, it's actually different times, I haven't made a note actually. But devotee is very expert at honouring Mahaprasadam. It disappears very fast. And they become very active as well at that time. So this is again two principles of brahmachari life and of course of spiritual life, that we become active and daksha, expert. So, devotees, we have to read the scriptures. Everyone, of course, here does. And develop sambandha. And, of course, sambandha, abhideya, prayojana. Sambandha we gain by learning the scriptures. Abhideya is how to apply the philosophy in our lives. And prayojana is a result of those activities, which is ultimately love of God. So, generally, devotees are well-versed. Actually, in some places, devotees aren't so well-versed. But here, definitely. And in many places, devotees are very well versed in the philosophy, but the application of the philosophy, the Abhideya, is sometimes much more difficult subject. This is why guru, this is why sadhu are there, because they deliver the shastra according to Deshakalapatra, time, place, and candidate and circumstance. So applying the philosophy, this Abhideya, is a very important part. In fact, if we analyze in our lives, 95% of our life, maybe more, is how to apply the philosophy in our lives. So without knowing the philosophy, we can't apply the philosophy. So first we have to know. But then the application is the main part of our life. Brahmachari life, we apply in a particular way. Grihastha life, slightly different way. Same principles, but in a slightly different environment. Vanaprastha and sannyas, again, renunciation. So, the application of the philosophy is, it's a tricky thing, but it's the main, the main activity that we're all engaged in. So here, we're focusing on Brahmachari because this is what the text is about. So, So this is the heavy bit. So the brahmachari should be well behaved and gentle and should not eat or collect more than necessary. He should always be active and expert, fully believing in the instructions of the spiritual master and shastras, fully controlling his senses. He should associate only as much as possible with women or those controlled by women. So there are many verses in this regard. Pumsastri maitani bhava etam. This attraction between male and female is a basic principle of material existence. And because of this, one thinks in terms of my house, my wife, my children, I, me, and mine, jamasya mahoya mahamameti. So this is the basic principle of material existence. We see even Freud understood that this phenomena, this energy between men and women, is really the motive for everything in material life. People, in fact, the British, when they were here in India, they've gone, it's okay, they've gone. I've just returned for a few days, that's all. they actually only employed, or they preferred to employ, men who were married with children, because they know if they employed a single person they could go, but because they had a married person they could exploit them, and they know they had to work, they had to provide for the wife, they had to provide for the kids. So this demoniac use of that knowledge is the materialistic way of using, but it is still the binding principle. So the materialist gets bound in that way and then he forgets everything except maintenance and looking after his family unit. There's a nice verse, there's a nice point in that purport of that verse in the fifth canto of Pumsastri Maitani Bhava Etam, a verse from the Satchiparana, where it states that if Krishna is in the middle of that relationship, then that binding principle is no longer there. So traditionally, I think in South India, when they had marriage, they'd give the husband, either the father-in-law or his father, would give the son a shalagram, and he'd say, make the Lord the center of your life. So in this way, the Grihastha ashram within devotional service is meant to put the Lord in the middle of our lives and to make him the purpose, whereas with the materialists, they just engage in sense gratification, they become bewildered and they lose intelligence and they lose the goal of life. Ananda Kupam, it's like a well. So we have to delineate the difference between materialistic marriage and spiritual marriage. But the principle of being involved in material life, the basic principle, that is still this attraction between male and female, who we can see so easily, even here in India with, I don't know anything about Bollywood actually, but I see the pictures everywhere. And any advertising you see, you can see there's this man and woman attraction. In the West they have these ridiculous adverts for an ice cream, and it's some extremely attractive woman. And this is just to advertise ice cream, or a car. In fact, I've been doing Sankirtan for many years, and they have these agricultural shows where they show off their tractors, and agricultural show, whatever to do with agriculture, big show. They got 200,000-300,000 people there. And one year they were selling a car called a Saxo. It's a Renault or a Citroen, a small car, I can't remember. And there was a fashion show. Everyone knows what a fashion show is? You get men and women with not much on, walking up and down a stage. And I was standing there. I wasn't watching, of course. I was looking at it thinking, they're trying to sell cars. What's this got to do with cars? Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing to do with cars. But they were using this to sell cars. So this attraction between male and female is used by the materialists to attract everyone to purchase this, to use this service. So this is the basic principle of material existence. There's one other nice verse in Bhagavad Gita, Yehi Samsvasaja Bhoga, that this samsvasaja, this material sense enjoyment, Ananta Vante Kunteya, it has a beginning and has an end. Adi, beginning, and ant. And the wise person, the Buddha, Na Teshu Ramate Buddha, he doesn't delight in that pleasure. Because that pleasure has a beginning and an end, we're eternal. How can we get eternal happiness from a material activity? Only by engaging in spiritual activities does a spirit soul in experience any happiness. And it's very simple, kirtan, prasadam. For me, I find kirtan very nice to watch, even not to get involved in, but just to watch. Sometimes I sit up here and I just watch. Last year, Gaurapani, I have a bad leg, so I can't dance so easily. I sat up there and I watched the kirtan. And the heart is so satisfied. It's so fulfilled just by watching kirtan. But any material activity, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, anything becomes distasteful very quickly. And Prabhupada gave the example of if you say, Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola over and over again, you're not satisfied. But by chanting, we experience, even if we've been chanting for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, you tell a materialist that we chant, how many names is 16 rounds? Like 28,622 names or something, some figure. And you tell a materialist we're chanting the same name 22,000 times a day. And we have done every day, every week, every month, every year for 20 years, 25 years. Some of the Prabhupada disciples, 34, 40. And they're in ecstasy when they hear the holy name. How does that make any material sense? It makes none. But we experience it because it's a spiritual sound vibration. Even if we don't have a strong taste for the holy name, if it was a material thing, we'd be disgusted with it right now. But because it's a spiritual activity, we become enlivened. And we want more and more. And I personally hanker for a nice kirtan. When I see it and when I hear it, and we all experience, it's so fulfilling for the heart because it's a spiritual activity. So these material activities, they have a beginning and an end, and they don't actually bring satisfaction to the self. And I think everyone's realized that's quote in Bhagavad Gita where it says material life, when you, it's very attractive in the beginning, but then it becomes very distasteful. And spiritual life is very distasteful. Anyone experience this, that it's very distasteful in the beginning? No? I see no nodding hands. When your alarm clock goes off at 4 in the morning, does the mind go, this is... And then after japa, after the morning program, then you're full enlivened. So this is the test of spiritual life. If it's a little painful at first, and the juice is there afterwards, the austerity is there. The same principle we spoke earlier, that this austerity is needed. If we engage this austerity in Krishna service, then we get anand, we get amrit. If we engage in material service, then we'll get some material result, but it won't bring us anand. And there's another verse, nice sloka. Krishna bhakta nishkam ata eva shanti shanta bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakala ashanta. That the materialist, whether he's looking for siddhi, material perfection, mystic powers, mukti, liberation, bhukti, sense enjoyment, they're going to be ashanta, they're going to be not peaceful. Because if you're wanting something for yourself, then there's always going to be disappointment. You're never going to be able to attain that perfect situation. There'll never be shanti. But if you're doing things to please Guru and Gauranga, you're going to please the Vaishnavas, then immediately there's peacefulness. Even if you don't do anything, if you just think in that way, you become peaceful in heart and mind. Just by trying to share Krishna consciousness, trying to give Krishna consciousness to others, even if you fail, it's like you have this expression in America, win-win. Everyone wants a win-win situation. When you preach, when you do anything in Krishna consciousness, it's a win-win. You win by trying. If you manage to chant your rounds that day, you've won again. If you manage to follow the principles, you've won again. If you manage to go out and book distribution, and you distribute 10 books, you've won. If you distribute one book, you've won. If you've distributed no books, you've won. Because you've gone out and tried. In this endeavor, there's no loss or diminution. Strive for yoga, Arjuna. We just have to try, we just have to strive, and then the success. So we can't lose. So anyone with any intelligence, when they understand that I'm in a situation where I do anything for Krishna, I'm going to win. I can't lose. So we're in a very wonderful situation. Every moment of every second of every day, we have a chance to engage in positive spiritual activity where we can't lose. Materialists, when they do things, so much anxiety. Even myself, I'm in Grihastha Ashram making arrangements for houses, for money, so much anxiety. But we can just do everything for Krishna's service, but the anxiety disappears when you realize, well, I'm making an endeavor. It's like Sankirtan. What do? We try our hardest to present the philosophy, present the book in the best possible way we can. But if the person doesn't take, we're not the doers. The result's up to Krishna. But we have the not incentive, we have the capability, or we have the control of how we can present. We can just do the best presentation we possibly can. And in that way, we get Krishna's mercy. So there's no loss. There's no loss in Krishna consciousness. So we should be very inspired every day to chant, to read, to associate. And in that way, we'll make spiritual advancement. It's guaranteed. And then Prabhupada promises at the end of his life, we go back to Godhead. So that's the ultimate. Prabhupada said, gamble one life, right? We don't gamble, but we gamble one life. For Krishna, we give everything to Krishna. Six principles of surrender. Accept Krishna as our maintainer. Rely on Krishna, etc. Then we'll go back to Godhead. So we can't lose. So everyone's going to stay and perform devotional service for their whole lives? Yeah? Good. If you make it, you can give a good word for me when you're up there. So there was a couple of little stories that I thought were nice, because we were talking a little bit about this attraction between male and female. So sometimes it gets a little twisted, and devotees point out that the opposite sex is at fault and I'm not at fault, from both sides. The men blame the women, the women blame the men. So Srila Prabhupada on many occasions pointed out that we're spirit soul, we're not the body, and that according to one's devotion, yiyatam mam prapajyante, according to your surrender to Krishna, Krishna rewards. He doesn't say if you're a woman's body, or a man's body, or a young body, or an old body, or a white body, or a brown body, or a black body. We don't have any here. Or a Chinese body. Anybody. No discriminations made. So there's a nice story. One Mataji, to show how Prabhupada was non-prejudiced. Not that Prabhupada, of course, in any way was. But Mother Malati, Shyama Sundar's wife, she tells one story. Many devotees have heard it, but it does bear repeating. So she was in complete anxiety, because it was in Mayapur. It was in early days before anything was built. She was cooking for Prabhupada. And she was in a lot of distress. She had a young daughter, Saraswati, and she had to go from Mayapur to Navadvip, buy all the stuff, come back. So she had to approach the treasurer and ask for money. The treasurer always gave her local fees. In other words, in India, in Mayapur especially, not so much now, but in those days, there was Western prices for rickshaws and the Ganga crossing, and there was local prices. So she just got local prices, and she got no money for a daughter. So when she got to the rickshaw, she had to fight with the rickshaw wala to say, tin taka dada bas, just, you know, 3 rupees, that's it, nothing else. And the man wanted more. So she, every day she had this fight. And then the daughter, they wanted to pay for the daughter across the Ganga on the boat. And they wanted her to pay Western prices. So she had this fight every day, all the way to Navadvip. Then she had to buy everything, and there was a fight. You know, coming from the West, sometimes for us to fight for, you know, a pound of bananas, it's just like... So she knew the prices, so she had to fight. So she came all the way back, and again, the whole trip with a rickshaw, and then with a boat again, and then she gets back, and she's tearing her hair out. This is before she cooks anything. And then she cooks, and then the person, one of Prabhupada's servant, grabs one of the pots that she needs to cook with for Prabhupada, for bathing Prabhupada, heating up water for bathing Prabhupada. So she's limited pots. So she's going through all this anxiety. And she just had this idea one day. She had this brainstorm. Oh yeah, before that, Prabhupada was saying that it's not quite enough salt in this, and this isn't quite right, and you should cook this a little bit differently, and cook this a little bit more, this is a little bit undercooked. She thought, I just can't get it right. I just can't get it right. Everything I do isn't quite right. So she had this brainwave one day. She sussed it out. She got it all worked out. I just won't cook for Prabhupada anymore. And then Prabhupada won't be displeased because I can't get it right. So she had this in her mind going over, I'll just tell Prabhupada, but I can't get it right, Prabhupada. Get someone who's much more qualified to cook for you. So she thought she had the solution. So she was going to go to Prabhupada that day. So then Prabhupada's godbrothers were all coming the next day. So Prabhupada said, I need you to cook for my godbrothers. So she thought, well, I'll just leave it a day and I'll cook for the godbrothers now that everything's in motion and they have to train up a new cook. And so she cooked for all Prabhupada's godbrothers. Many of Prabhupada's godbrothers came. So she described, she came in to the arena. Prabhupada was sitting there at the head of this big table. And it was like, you know, these powerful elderly Vaishnavas all with dandas. And she was a lady, young lady in her 20s, completely freaked out that she had to serve Prabhupada. And she knew that Prabhupada was being criticized by his godbrothers for having lady disciples serving him. So she was like, so she came in with a plate and she put it in front of Prabhupada, and then she covered her head with a sari completely like this, she describes. And then she just crawled out like this. So then Prabhupada said, yes, I am taking service from a woman. But she would slit her throat for me, and I would slit my throat for her. So at that point, she starts crying and just backs out of the room. So a very nice example that Prabhupada's appreciating the service and not discriminating against anyone. Anyway, there's lots of other stories, but I'll stop there and ask any questions or comments from any of the Vaishnavas or Vaishnavis. What time can you finish? 9:15. Is that true? Okay, one more story. I did write them down somewhere. So this isn't really a story about any relevance to the class or about male-women attraction, but it's just a nice story. So this Prabhupada was on a morning walk, and one of his devotees, one devotee, who was a book distributor and very sincere and very big book distributor, And she was cleaning Prabhupada's room as a special treat because she'd done so much nice service. So then Prabhupada came back from morning walk early. It's only a small story, but it's just, I found it very sweet. So Prabhupada came back and he was speaking with one Indian man. So she came down the stairs and she couldn't get out of the way. So she had to sort of back up against the wall, and Prabhupada came up and stopped in front of her and smiled at her. But he was with this Indian man. So he was describing about Krishna. He was saying Krishna's like millions and millions of suns. And he was describing Krishna like that. And he said to the Indian man, "Do you want to see Krishna?" And the Indian man went. And then he turned around to Mula Bhakriti and said, that was a devotee's name, said, "Do you want to see Krishna?" And she said, "Yes." And Prabhupada said, "I will show you Krishna." So in that way, she became very inspired that Prabhupada was going to directly show her Krishna. And she left her body, she died of cancer, and it's described when she left her body, she was very blissful and happy. There's another one little story that one devotee called Sudan, who was one of the early devotees. And he didn't want to go to Japan, and Prabhupada wanted to send him to Japan. So he decided that he wasn't going to go to Japan, and he wasn't going to preach. So Prabhupada was asking him, and he just said, no, Prabhupada, I don't want to go. So eventually, Prabhupada turns around to him and says, "If you go to Japan, I will personally, at the time of death, take you back to Godhead. I will personally come and take you back to Godhead." So Sudan thought, "Okay, I'll go." So he went and preached, and he found it very difficult, but he preached. So then, unfortunately, he died 5 years ago, something like that. So, described at the time of death, there was one devotee present, but he wasn't really in the association of devotees so much, although one devotee was present. So, described that he, just before he left his body, he sat up and said, "Prabhupada, you came for me." And then he left. So in that way, Prabhupada fulfilled his promise. So there's so many nice stories anyway about Srila Prabhupada. I used to do Sankirtan, and every evening I had to do sort of administration. So I used to listen to these DVDs over and over and over and over and over and over. And it's so relishable. It's not just the stories, it's you see the love in the devotees' eyes when they talk about Srila Prabhupada. And that really, again, it's nourishment for the soul. So this, to conclude, this attraction between male and female, we have to be very careful about. But if we engage ourselves more and more in Krishna's service, and we merge ourselves, am I allowed to use that word, merge? No. Into Krishna bhakti, into devotional service, then we will become more and more free of this material energy. And ultimately, jivan mukta sa uchite, we will become absorbed in Krishna's spiritual energy, and these material hankerings and pangs will automatically disappear. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Shri Vaishnava Sangha ki jai, Tai Gaur Premanandi Haribol.